Good morning, everyone. I call this regularly scheduled meeting of the Public Service Commission to order. It is 10:04 a.m. on Wednesday, November 18th, 2020. I'm Commissioner Brian Crotchis, joined by Commissioner Julie Fedorchuk and Commissioner Randy Christman. So we do have a quorum. I want to say welcome to a new employee. Pamela Thompson has joined us, so good to have her on board. And then just wishing everyone a safe and happy Thanksgiving next week. That's next Thursday, right? And then for myself personally, I go into panic mode on the countdown to Christmas. And you think, okay, I still have 30 days. And then, well, now I've got 22, and then pretty soon you've got two. And this year I'm going to do it differently. I'm sure that'll work out fine. But no, good morning, everyone. Concludes my opening comments. Commissioner Fedorchuk.
I'm glad to see you set goals. You can always, little milestones, little tiny steps of improvement.
Absolutely.
I also want to welcome Pamela. It's great to have new employees on board, and we hope you like our team, and we hope that you're challenged and rewarded here and enjoyed as much as I have for the last 8 years. So it's great to have you. Something I've been working on with the organization of MISO states now for the last year, our pandemic project, we'll call it, is an initiative online ratings. And it's something that we might bring up again sometime in a case with our utilities. It's something I'll be talking to them about, and I wanted to mention it here in this kind of informal setting just so you guys know where it's coming from. But the line rating, the independent market monitor for the MISO region, has estimated that there's $100 million in savings annually just by adjusting line ratings and how the line ratings are set and used in the MISO region. That's significant, obviously significant savings for customers without very little investment, if any. So we've looked at, how utilities use the line ratings, how they set them. It's up to them to set them. And then how MISO could use them in emergency situations or in daily operations to basically get more capacity out of the lines depending on the weather conditions, really. So when it's really windy, the wind automatically or effectively cools the lines, allowing them to carry more electricity. And how could that type of knowledge, system knowledge, be employed to increase the amount of capacity that the lines can carry without having to go out and replace and build new lines for that? So it's something we've been exploring for the last year. I had led a panel on Monday with the Midwest Governors Association and OMS on transmission, and had experts from all around the country kind of talking about different technologies that exist. It's pretty exciting, and it's got some great potential, so it's going to be an ongoing effort to work with the transmission operators to get them on board with it and to find some ways to be more transparent about how they calculate the line ratings, how they use them, and how they can coordinate with MISO to maximize the existing potential of the investments we've already made in the grid to better serve the customers. So exciting, new, kind of new, but coming to some productive conclusions here in the next number of months through OMS.
Very good news.
Don't I work on exciting things?
Pamela, you had no idea, did you? This is pretty exciting stuff. No, that is. That's fantastic news. Commissioner Christman?
Well, also welcome, Pamela. Glad to have you on board, and looking forward to working with you as we go here. It's not what I was going to necessarily say, but in the line ratings, I haven't been a part of that formalized of a discussion on line ratings, but it has come up. And I guess just the one thing that I'm always concerned about, to the extent that a more thorough analysis can find ways that we are able to get more production out of existing resources, that's all good. Yeah. I do worry sometimes about those who are just trying to find a way to ignore real physical constraints that exist for safety reasons.
Right.
in order to hurry up and build something that they want to build without paying the costs of transporting it. So that's always the tough balancing game in that discussion.
Yep.
And so I'm glad you're a part of that and moving forward. The other thing that I did want to highlight, for those of you who maybe didn't get to thoroughly go through your Washington Post yesterday, Jeff Bezos, the Amazon founder, some time ago had announced a $10 billion, with a B, dollar, kind of an environmental fund. And now here recently what the story was about, they're releasing the first almost $800 million out of that $10 billion. And it's going to environmental groups, to name a few that we're familiar with, the Environmental Defense Fund, the Natural Resources Defense Council, the Nature Conservancy, a number of others. Basically a checklist of the groups that kind of come in and file lawsuits, fund protests, things like that, and stand in the way of development of a lot of important things that North Dakota, as well as the rest of the country, rely on. And back to my legislative days, I used to preach shopping locally. At that time, I meant in our small towns as opposed to our larger North Dakota cities. I continue to do that, although now it's more in the context of shopping at least at North Dakota merchants, as opposed to places like Amazon, where your dollars are used to fund the very things that stand in the way of North Dakota's prosperity.
Amen, Brandy. I talked earlier how I made a pledge this year to buy all my Christmas presents locally from local vendors, and that's just in keeping with your long-term tradition. I haven't been as loyal in those regards in the past, but boy, this year our local merchants really have struggled,
really,
and
it.
Not only with the online competition but with the pandemic shutting so many of them down. So I really think it's important for everybody to try to spend as much of their financial resources locally during this holiday season, where a lot of them depend on this season to make ends meet for the year.
And by the way, Mr. Chairman, as far as your issue of counting down the days.
Procrastinating.
I would just recommend the policy that I am maintaining, that I've practiced in the past, and it provides a lot of comfort as we go through the season, of just not even worrying about it till we're at least down in the lower half of the single-digit days before Christmas.
I like the way you think, and local merchants can expect to see me within 20 or 48 hours of Christmas.
With a dazed, crazed look in your eyes.
Well, anyway, you have to remember the real reason for Christmas, though.
We
never want that to escape. It's interesting when you think of an entity like Amazon that relies on UPS, FedEx, their own various methods of delivery, and the fact that some of the projects that are opposed are tied to the production of petroleum products, which an Amazon needs to heat their facilities and to move their product or broker the products that they represent through their site. So there's a great irony in that, and you can't have it both ways. So I think it's interesting.
As I mentioned in a radio interview yesterday, talking about this very thing, for those people who are really shook up and concerned about the man-made part of climate change and thinking that, this is all great because it's standing in the way of fossil fuels, a lot of these same groups stand in the way of building transmission lines, which are an essential component of building out wind energy, too. And so they're not helping in that regard, really, either. So it's the wind advocates should be concerned about this Amazon thing, too.
All right. First, I move approval of the previous minutes.
Second.
We have a motion and a second. Is there any further discussion? Sensing none, all in favor signify by saying aye.
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 All those opposed signify by saying nay. Motion is approved.
Okay, moving into the regular agenda, my first item, I move the Commission adopt the order on consent agreement in Public Service Commission, Northwest Grading Incorporated, Damage Prevention Enforcement, case number PU-19-312.
Second.
We received, we being the Commission, received a North Dakota one-call complaint from Chris Nielsen with One Oak Rockies Midstream on September 10th, 2019. Alleging a violation by Northwest Grading Incorporated of the North Dakota Century Code, section 49-23-04, which is the North Dakota One Call system, the notification center. And they did not provide excavation notice at least 48 hours prior to beginning excavation activities in one of the locations that they were working on. On September 12th, 2019, the Commission sent a letter to Northwest enclosing the complaint, and Northwest did file a response to the complaint on September 25th, again of 2019, and on October 28th, 2019, One Oak filed a response to Northwest's response. Advocacy staff on August 17th of 2020 filed a formal complaint requesting that the Commission find Northwest in violation of North Dakota Century Code, again, section 49-23-04. And on September 23rd, 2020, the Commission found the complaint filed on September 10th, 2019, states a prima facie case and attempted to serve Northwest with the complaint. On October 30th, 2020, a consent agreement between advocacy staff and Northwest was filed for resolution of the complaint. And just a little bit of a background on this, and this goes back to August of 2019, Northwest personnel began excavating while installing a water line. During that excavation, damage was caused by their equipment and operator to a 14-inch poly natural gas gathering line. The cost to repair the pipeline was approximately $13,000, and the value of natural gas lost was approximately $90,000. But that might suggest that there was a leak. There was not a leak. The loss of gas was to drain the line, empty the line, and then do the repairs, which they have to release the gas to drain the line and then safely make the repairs on that facility. And North Dakota Century Code does provide that except in an emergency, an excavator shall contact the notification center and provide an excavation or location notice before beginning any excavation. And that has to be done at least 48 hours prior to excavation beginning. So what happened, this was a fairly complicated route, and in terms of how it jogged and moved around. And the description on the original ticket, which Northwest did file prior to beginning work, wasn't completely accurate for one location. Northwest did come back requesting a second ticket to mark that location where there was a discrepancy, where the line was a little bit removed from the first application, and began excavating, however, before they actually had that ticket cleared and that area marked. So they, according to staff, were very good to work with. They were cooperative. They have no prior record of any incidents with the Commission, and deemed to be a pretty good operator. But again, the takeaway on this for all excavators and operators in the field is this is a very precise, exacting science, if you will, in terms of making sure that the area that you're working in has been properly marked. And even if it's off by a few feet, which we had in a prior case, inches can certainly make a big difference. So just for all excavators, operators out there in particular, be very conscious of that. And again, we just want to make sure that your folks are safe out in the field and the public is safe as well. The fine that is to be assessed to Northwest is $5,000, and that would be payable to the North Dakota Public Service Commission within 10 business days of service of an order accepting the consent agreement, which we'll be voting on shortly, and I do support. Commissioner Fedorchak?
No comments, thank you.
Commissioner Christman?
No comments.
We have a motion and a second. Sensing no further discussion, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
All those opposed signify by saying nay. The motion is approved.
Okay, next on my list, I move the commission adopt the order in Otter Tail Power Company Transmission Facility Cost Recovery 2021 rates, case number PU-20-383.
Second.
Okay, Otter Tail, as a requirement that we have issued to them, filed their annual rate update for the transmission facility cost recovery rider tariff. That occurred on August 31st of 2020. The commission issued a notice of opportunity for hearing on September 23rd, 2020. No response was received during that time period allowed. And Otter Tail's proposed rate to be effective for bills rendered on or after January 1, 2021 include costs for 8 new transmission projects, updated electric transmission expenses with offsetting revenues, and a true-up amount from the current rate. The decrease, and this is a decrease, ever so slight, but a decrease for an average, for a residential customer, average residential customer using 1,000 kilowatt hours per month, would be 4 cents per month. And for large general service, it would be a decrease of $8.65 a month. So there were 8 new projects that were rolled into this rider, system improvements and modifications, upgrades, that type of thing. So there was additional expense related to that, but there was also an over-collected balance of $935,000, which offset that amount and lowered the per kilowatt hour rate for this rider ever so slightly. I mentioned the 8 new transmission projects. The rider also includes forecast updates for previously approved projects, MISO return on equity, SPP expenses, depreciation expense, property taxes, operation and maintenance of the system itself, and just again the projects tied to load growth, which is typically a driving factor as the state continues to grow in many areas. So that need has to be satisfied, and it was alluded to in terms of reliability during opening comments. So this probably will not receive the same fanfare, I would imagine, as the rider that we had previously, where things did go up, but this is essentially going to remain flat, and I am in agreement and will vote to approve this when we get to that point in time. Commissioner Fedorchak?
Thank you, Commissioner Crosius. I think this just shines light on the fact that it's the same process every year. This is a generation rider. The last one was a transmission rider. But it's the same process of evaluating the real expenses from the last year and adjusting the rider to accommodate any over or under earnings and projecting the new needs for the next year and coming up with a rate to collect that from the customers. This, as it relates to generation, new generation investments for MDU, and
Commissioner Fedorchak, we're on BK2.
On
Otter Tail transmission.
So this is transmission. I'm sorry, I was going down to the next one.
Yeah.
thank you. So anyway, we've got a few of these today, the riders, and the process is all the same. That's my only point.
Right, it's a good point. That's a good point. You're once ahead, again ahead of yourself.
Yeah, I think my paper is stuck together.
Commissioner Christman?
I have nothing to add.
You want to talk about the third kind of rider?
I think we have
a I was just thinking to the old
we might have
TV with the never mind.
We've
We have a motion and a second. Sensing no further discussion, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
All those opposed signify by saying nay. The motion is approved.
Okay, my next item, which I move the commission reduce the application fee to $10,000, suspend the rates, and issue a notice of opportunity for hearing in Montana Dakota Utilities Company Generation Resource Cost Recovery Rates, case number PU-20-436.
Second.
Okay, this was again filed, I shouldn't say again, but this was filed on October 30th, 2020. Montana Dakota Utilities Company filed this as a change to its generation resource recovery rate to reflect 2021 projected costs for its Lewis and Clark reciprocating internal combustion engine units. The effect of this rate change, as they have it proposed, for an average residential customer using 894 kilowatt hours per month is an increase of 4 cents per month. And what we will look at is whether the investments and associated costs for the resources qualify for recovery, whether the incurred costs are reasonable and prudent, and whether the rate adjustments are consistent with the terms of MDU's tariff. Those interested are invited to comment on the application in writing. Persons desiring a hearing must file a written request identifying their interest in the proceeding and the reasons for requesting a hearing. Comments and requests for hearing must be received by January 2nd, 2020. If deemed appropriate, the commission can determine the matter without a hearing. And as always, if anyone would like more information, they can contact the Public Service Commission at 701-328-2400. Commissioner Thorcheck?
No comments.
Commissioner Christman?
Me either.
We have a motion and a second. Sensing no further discussion, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
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 All those opposed signify by saying nay. The motion is approved.
Okay, and the last item on my list this morning, I move the commission suspend the rates, reduce the application fee to $10,000, and issue a notice of opportunity for hearing in Montana Dakota Utilities Company Renewable Resource Cost Recovery Rates, case number PU-20-440.
Second.
On November 2nd of 2020, Montana Dakota Utilities Company filed a change to its renewable resource cost adjustment rates. The new rates reflect projected costs through December 31st, 2021, related to an investment in the Thunder Spirit Wind Project, Cedar Hills Wind Project, and Diamond Willow Wind Project, and also reflect a projected undercollected balance of the current renewable resource cost adjustment as of December 31st, 2020. The effect of the rate change on the bill for a residential customer, again, an average customer using 894 kilowatt hours per month, is an increase of 2 cents per month. The same issues, as I had mentioned before, the same three issues will be considered in the proceeding. And again, those interested are invited to comment on the application in writing. Persons desiring a hearing must file a written request identifying their interest in the proceeding and the reasons for requesting a hearing. Comments and requests for hearing must be received by January 2nd, 2021. And again, if deemed appropriate, the commission can determine the matter without a hearing. Commissioner Fedorchak?
No comments. Thank you.
Commissioner Christman?
None.
We have a motion and a second. Sensing no further discussion, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
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 All those opposed signify by saying nay. Motion is approved.
Okay, and that concludes my portfolio. Commissioner Christman.
Mr. Chairman, I have two requests. First of all, if there's no objection, I'd like to reverse the order of items 3 and 4.
Okay.
And the other one, I would request that RC1 be laid over until the next meeting.
Okay. We'll hold RC1 over and RC4 will be before RC3.
Right.
Okay, sounds good.
Okay, so then moving to RC2, I move the commission approve the parent guarantee filed on November 9, 2020 in Northern Divide Wind LLC, 200 megawatt Northern Divide Wind Energy Center, Burke County, decommissioning plan and cost, case number PU-20-270.
Second.
So on November 9th, Northern Divide Wind filed their decommissioning financial assurance in the form of a parent guarantee. The facility is estimated to be operational in this year yet, in this next just over a month, with a nameplate capacity of 197.2 megawatts, and that will come from 74 installed turbines. The parent guarantee covers the full amount of the approved decommissioning estimate, which is $13,585,520, and that estimate was approved by us on November 9th. NextEra Energy Capital Holdings Incorporated is the guarantor, and it has a credit rating in the A category from S&P Global Ratings. So it meets our requirements to qualify to file a parent guarantee. Staff has reviewed Northern Divide's parent guarantee and recommends approval, as do I.
We have a motion and a second. Is there any further discussion? Sensing none, all in favor signify by saying aye.
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 All those opposed signify by saying nay. The motion is approved.
Okay, RC4, I move the commission approve the letter of credit form for execution filed on November 12, 2020 in Aurora Wind Project LLC, Aurora Wind Project, Williams County Decommissioning Plan and Cost, case number PU-19-318.
Second.
So the reason I wanted these back-to-back is because I wouldn't blame someone for confusing these two projects when we're talking about their financial assurances in the same meeting here, and they're both up in the northwest corner of the state, because last week I sent our analyst, Adam, on a bit of a mission, because I confused the two and the scope of them and asked some questions and got it mixed up. So anyway, that was Burke Wind. Now we're on to Aurora, but for this same purpose.
Northern Divide, the previous one.
Right, it's not Burke Wind anymore. Oops. So that was Northern Divide. Now we're on to Aurora Wind, and they're constructing, this is a larger one, a 298.8 megawatt facility comprised of 71 turbines. So a good part of these turbines are really large. I think they will be the largest turbines in the state. They expect to be operational still this year yet. So on November 12th, Aurora filed a letter of credit form detailing the terms of a decommissioning letter of credit, which will be issued after we approve their form. And among other things, the form indicates that the letter of credit will be issued for the full amount of the approved decommissioning estimate, which is $13,868,887. That plan and estimate was approved by us back in early July. Staff has reviewed Aurora's proposed letter of credit form and believe that the terms of the form comply with our rules and regarding decommissioning financial assurance. Therefore, staff recommends that the commission approve the letter of credit form, as do I.
We have a motion and a second. Is there further discussion?
Mr. Chairman, if I might ask Mr. Christman a question. I was surprised by the only, our letters of credit only provided for 1 year, or why is the term so short for this? And how do we know that they re-up it every year?
Well, it's a guaranteed renewable situation, and beyond that, if you're looking for more of an answer to that, I had Adam come in, who has worked on it more extensively than I.
Is that to enable, and another related question potentially, an annual review of their credit standing, or even for those in terms of the parent guarantee, for example, to ensure that they continue to have an A rating? Is that the reason for the 12-month term, so we can continue to monitor those ratings?
Yes, in terms of the letter of credit, they're subject to annual credit reviews, which gives the issuer a chance to take a look at the financials and review it for whatever concerns they might have.
But that's the issuer of the...
Yeah.
Review these every year.
Right. That would be the bank in this case.
Okay. Do we get notice that it's been reviewed, or how do we? What if it expired and we didn't know that? I guess that's my only concern, is that if something falls through the crack, the letter of credit expires.
We get notified for it, and I believe we have 30 days to act upon receipt of notification that the letter of credit facility might lapse.
Okay. All right.
Now, that's an excellent question, because a company who may be rated A, and of course this is a letter of credit, but when you look at just financial ratings, if that should deteriorate for whatever reason and no longer qualify, I think it's really, really important that staff's following up and doing it the way they're doing and the way you have it set up, Commissioner Crisman, to review these on an annual basis.
But again, our staff isn't reviewing them. It's the bank or whoever, the financial institution, that, and then we get the notice.
The confirmation that.
How often do we review all of the e-commission? 5 years?
5 years.
Okay.
This is an ongoing, annualized function on an annual basis in terms of the credit ratings themselves, getting confirmation from the financial institutions.
Yeah, we would get a letter if the bank intended not to renew the letter of credit.
Adam, if I'm correct too, it automatically renews if some sort of notice is not provided to us that they intend to discontinue the letter of credit.
Correct. Yes.
And since Commissioner Cross just brought this up, the ratings, are those, how are we notified about those? Remind me. Is that an annual thing, or is that every 5 years?
So for credit ratings, we wouldn't get notified on that. We would have to follow up with that. Normally, how credit rating agencies handle that is that prior to going through a review process, they will put the company themselves on notice that they are being subject to a credit review. And then once they send that notice out, which will be public, at that point they have a certain amount of time to conduct their credit review and issue their recommendation. But we would not get notified on whether a rating changed.
In general, with the credit rating, when we would evaluate it as staff, is when they're looking for to guarantee it as a company, because then we are concerned in the actual financial of the company. However, to the extent that they actually provide us something as a bond or financial assurance, we would probably generally look at the organization that provided the letter of credit or the bond, and probably on that not be as concerned with the actual credit rating of the company, since we have an actual financial cash insurance there.
At any given time, though, when we do get into a situation where the credit rating has to be an A rating, at any given time, whether it's Fitch or another rating agency, we can actually look that up. At any given time, it's available for anyone to see, and I think that would be an important part of the process, if it isn't, to be reviewing those periodically just to see if the rating has slipped at all.
Right.
Mr. Chairman, if I may, I think a number of our WINF companies will not actually show up with a credit rating at all. And that's partially a reason why we can expect to receive more financial assurances in the future, such as letter of credits or bonding, because I know that since they don't have a credit rating, they'll be unable to provide a guarantee.
All right. It feels like we've used some for that, though. Credit ratings? Have we approved some based on credit rating?
Yes.
Oh, that's more the utilities.
We have received, there are the utilities, but we've also received credit ratings from NextEra specifically.
Yeah.
And the larger companies will have those, but some of the smaller developers and independent power producers will likely not have that, because it has a certain sum of money that they're required to even get a credit rating. And a lot of times, I think if you balance that off with the cost of a financial assurance, it's just cheaper to provide actual bond or a letter of credit.
So for NextEra, who has a sizable number of projects in our state, they have to confirm every 5 years that they have their credit rating necessary.
I mean, how often they evaluate that?
Well, I would strongly suggest that we just look up
sure.
a larger entity like NextEra on an annual basis at the very least, just to ensure that we're monitoring where their credit rating currently stands and not, you know, waiting until 5 years. I mean, I don't anticipate it changing, but at the same time, they do at times.
Well, they have so many things guaranteed that there's probably just about always going to be some coming up every year. So something will show up, and if it slipped, but I think with the large amount of guarantees they have out, that it's something that staff is just keeping an eye on there.
They're also supposed to, as part of the guarantee, if I recall correctly, it's been a while since I looked at one, but as soon as there's any material change in credit rating, they're required to notify us as well. So, but
I thought we included that in our rules.
That's not to say that we shouldn't look review it as well independently, but yeah.
Okay. Thanks. Thank you, Adam and Jack.
We have a motion and a second. Is there any further discussion? Sensing none, all in favor signify by saying aye.
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 All those opposed signify by saying nay. The motion is approved.
Okay, and then RC3, we have, I'll make the motion first. To move the commission adopt the order in Cameo LLC, Bismarck Rate Center, numbering resources, case number PU-20-443.
Second.
This is kind of a new issue for us, and one that, while it might seem small with a company that some of us probably aren't even so familiar with, could have big implications if we're unable to finish resolving this issue, and this gets us most of the way there, but not quite across the finish line. So on July 16th, what started this all out, the FCC issued an order requiring a new 3-digit phone number, and those 3 digits are 988, to be activated nationwide by July 16th of 2022, and that number is to be used as a suicide prevention hotline. Similar to 911, except for 988 will be for suicide prevention. Their order requires that any area code that utilizes that 988 prefix has to transition away from 7-digit dialing to 10-digit dialing. So in the case of calling to our front desk, instead of dialing 328-2400, we would have to dial 701-328-2400. A big, big hassle for a lot of people to always be doing that. So we want to get this resolved. And as it turns out, if there's no utilization of the 988 prefix and we have it permanently deactivated, then that area code can continue on with 7-digit dialing. And transition to the 10-digit dialing, if that's going to take place, has to begin by April of 2021. So we don't have much time here. Staff investigation found that the 988 prefix is active in the Bismarck Rate Center. The 8 block of 988 is assigned to this company, Cameo. And then the 9 block was assigned to another company called Peerless Network. And upon staff's request, Peerless Network immediately just reassigned their numbers and returned the block. However, one of their customers had switched companies and ported their number to another company. And that issue remains unresolved, but I really don't want to get into it today. I'm very hopeful that in a very short time we will work through that one number. Cameo, back to this case, agreed to reassign their customers in the block in exchange if we would create a new code and a block assigned to them in the Bismarck Rate Center. They've been very good to work with, but that is what they really feel they need.
And on November 2nd, they submitted a request to the Federal North American Numbering Pooling Administration, which actually authorizes these things, for additional numbering out of this Bismarck Rate Center. That numbering pool subsequently denied their request because Cameo does not meet what's called the months to exhaust requirement. Mm. However, this commission has the authority to waive that requirement, and if we do, then the numbering system will approve their request. And so after waiving that requirement with this motion, Cameo will be able to obtain the new block of numbers from the numbering pool. Mm. And then we'll just have the one single phone number out there to resolve, to clear up the 988 space for suicide prevention hotline.
Mr. Chairman, if I might answer or ask Mr. Christman a question. It seems odd that they have to ask to get a new block if they're giving up one. Like, why would that be so? It seems like it would almost be automatic. Okay, we're giving this back, so we need something to replace it.
Well, their ask is bigger than just getting some new numbers. You know, within, and I'll just use the state's 328 prefix again as an example, but there's all these prefixes that are active in North Dakota. They could get a block potentially in one of those that's already being used. What they're asking for is and the block is those last four numbers from 0 to 9999. They're asking for a new prefix. They want a specific one, and it's 299 is what they're asking for, and then a block out of a 299 prefix.
Why would they? What would be the driver for that?
I'm guessing like 988, it has kind of a, I hate to say, I can't think of a better metaphor, but like a ring to it, you know, that might help people. It might just be more catchy.
So they think their customers might like it
and really be able to sign. I don't know specifically why 299. That's an open one that they selected. We try to be conservative with handing these out, but in the interest of getting this done and not having a big fight over it, but to try and clear out this 988 area, this is what I brought to the table, that we go ahead and get this approved and
seems to make
forward
sense.
With 299.
So then I know you didn't want to talk a lot about this other issue, the one remaining number, but is what you're saying that if we can't resolve it with that one person, like they refuse to give it up, they could force the entire state to have to go to 10-digit dialing?
If we don't resolve it, yes, that is the case.
Wow. Hmm. They don't love their number that much.
You don't. Well, yeah.
Okay.
I think I may have found maybe the roadblock in solving it. Okay. Here just very recently, and so I'm optimistic that we are going to be on a fresh start here to resolving this and get it done.
And that doesn't require any action on our part?
Well, we'll see once.
Okay. All right. Thank you, Randy. It was interesting.
We have a motion and a second. Sensing no further discussion, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
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 All those opposed signify by saying nay. The motion is approved.
That concludes my portfolio, Mr. Chairman.
All right. Thank you, Commissioner Christman. For announcements, we have an informal hearing this afternoon at 1:30. It is for NSP, Transmission and Renewable Resource Cost Recovery. That's case number PU-20-406. And we also have, with the same company, a Renewable Resource Cost Recovery informal, that's for case number PU-20-426. Steve, are those consolidated, or will we be doing those individually? Will they be handled individually?
I believe they will.
During the informal? Okay. But starting at 1:30, and then we'll start with the one, then go move to the second one after that. On Monday, the 23rd, this coming Monday at 9 a.m., we have a formal hearing for New Star Pipeline. That is a 10-inch north system pipeline relocation in Cass County. That's case number PU-20-381. And as with the informal and then the formal hearing, many of the individuals participating will be remote, but they are all open to the public, as always. And then on Tuesday, November 24th at 10 o'clock a.m., we have a formal hearing on rules for common pipeline carriers and siting. And then we have another rulemaking case, and that would be for energy conversion facility siting criteria. Again, that's Tuesday, November 24th at 10 a.m. And then our next regular commission meeting will be on Wednesday, December 2nd. Only 23 shopping days left before Christmas, or 22. And that'll be at 10 a.m. here in the commission room. So, see, I'm already counting down and keeping this straight. So, that concludes the announcements. We will, I don't know if we have any press on the line, but we'll check. So we will take a brief recess, followed by the administrative portion of the meeting. And then, excuse me, during that time period, take questions from the press if anyone's on. We are in recess.